Hello and welcome to the Weird Things Podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Hello, hello.
Mr. Justin Robert Young.
Hello.
With his protege in his arms.
Exactly. Hi, say hi.
Finally, we got some real smarts on the program. Joining us for the first time, little Bella.
So I created a little thing using N8N, which is my favorite workflow automation tool at the moment, where basically what I do is I have it collect all sorts of stories throughout the week, and then right before our show, send me an email with a list of stories. And let's see, this is pretty cool. This is actually from 2 days ago. Researchers create the world's smallest shooting video game using nanoscale technology. A research team demonstrated the world's smallest shooting game, a unique nanoscale game inspired by classic arcade games. This achievement was made possible by real-time control of the force fields between nanoparticles using focused electron beams. Though it has practical applications for the manipulation of nanoscale objects that could revolutionize biomedical engineering and nanotechnology, blah, blah, blah. You don't have to justify it, guys. You had it at arcade game. That was... So this is pretty cool. So basically what they were doing is basically showing how they're able to like manipulate things at a nano scale and to get them to do kind of really cool stuff, which, we don't hear as much as lately about like nanotech and other things. And it's not because there's not a lot of things going on in that space. It's often that, you know, we have a short attention span when it comes to headlines. And I'm looking at a article from phys.org where they actually show this is really cool. They have like a fighter and nano bullets, etc. Brian, I'm going to send this to you if you want to hear the link to this and be there momentarily to your Schwood account.
Okay, dokie.
And there you go. And you know, one of the problems was with nanotech. I was like super, super into this when I was like young. Like, oh, nanotech's going to be great. I kept thinking there's any minute now, any minute we're going to solve this nanotech thing and we're going to have molecular machines and anything around us. And then it turned out that, you know, it took nature billions of years to kind of like figure out how to make relatively stable systems that could self-replicate, et cetera. Not to say we won't be able to do that too, but there are all sorts of little variabilities that come into at nanoscales. And it's been a lot trickier than, you know, we were hoping for.
All right. So here we go. I got the email is okay.
Well, at least Bell is talking to me, so that's something.
I'm with you. Sorry, remember we talked about how every week is a kitty hawk?
So anyhow, Andrew, what do you think? Well, I think it's interesting. I think we're going to see a lot more development in this space because I think it's pretty exciting to see where we can go. We have a lot more capabilities now with image recognition models, AI systems, ML. You start applying those things to electron microscopes and the idea that you could start running a bunch of experiments at scale. Very, very cool. And I think that I don't know how much we've been using machine learning to control electron microscopes and run these experiments. But if it's going to take, you know, running thousands of them to start figuring out, you know, how to move objects around, I'm excited. That's a great point.
So so we do have video of it. Is this a good example to look at?
Yeah, I guess so. I never watched the videos.
Oh, okay. Well, meanwhile, that's all I want to see. I heard video game and I'm like, let me see it.
Yeah. So yeah, we're looking at somebody with a controller, a full size like controller, moving an electron microscope around to with some object that's like shooting like force fields at actual objects.
That's freaking amazing.
It's like inner space. And I love the sound of the laboratory right now. They're shooting nano bullets.
That's
incredible.
That's really incredible. It reminds me of like you would get like a hockey game where you'd have little tiny hockey men and play where it's like you couldn't have actual video games. And so you would have to play like miniaturized miniatures. That's incredible.
Yeah.
Like bubble top hockey.
Bubble top hockey. That's what it was. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very cool. So I think that like I said, that we hear a lot of stuff about dealing with, you know, what's going on with bits, but what's going on with atoms is, I think, extremely exciting too, because it's just, I think these things are going to reinforce each other. We certainly need to learn how to push tiny atoms around to build better processors, and better processors, we get smarter systems.
So how far off? So one of the things Richard Feynman, he gave the legendary lecture, There's Always Room at the Bottom, where, and we've talked about versions of this on the program before, but I was always struck by the fact that before we get into compression algorithms, before we get into magnetic storage, before we get into symbolic stuff, he was speaking purely about really tiny things. And he figured, you know, so many pixels to draw a letter, now replace pixels with stable atoms, and at a, you know, super micron level, how small could you replicate the actual text of the Encyclopedia Britannica, and on and on and on. Like that was all highly, highly theoretical at the time that he said it. And I can't believe that a scant half century later, like, should there be enough of a motivation to do it? I wonder how close they could get to pulling off exactly or pretty close to what Feynman proposed.
Well, remember, he had a prize which he offered to the first person or group that could create like a certain scale motor. And it actually got won pretty quickly because they just used watchmaker tools to do it. Oh. And he was a little bit disappointed that they just used watch tools and not some radical new thing. But he was like, hey, a prize is a prize. I think it gets into it's like anything. It's just the more complex the system at that scale, the more they fall apart. But, you know, every day when we drive around in our cars, we have accelerometers, our phones. If you look at an accelerometer inside of a phone, it's actually it's a wafer inside of a microprocessor. It's extremely small. And this is tail and its tail position. So there are machines and there are moving parts inside of our phone. We don't even think about as moving parts because they're, you know, embedded in microprocessors. So we have made a lot of progress in some of those areas. But I think, yes, yeah, the really complex ones. And I also think it takes a certain kind of thinking.
Yeah. So where do you think the AI side of this helps advance it?
Well, one of it is, you know, we've talked about before about how you can use AI systems to run a ton of simulations, right? If you want to build a robot that's going to be able to like navigate a factory or a self-driving car, if you want to figure out like, can I move, you know, a beryllium, you know, atom across this surface, you know, and I have a 0.3% chance if there's an electrostatic discharge, I'm making this up, you know, if it, you know, deviating, can I run a bunch of calculations to figure out how to get it through there? So running the calculations from that, materials, one of my clients works in the semiconductor space, and we're trying to use ML to help improve materials discovery. And you might find that like, oh, if we do this little coding or this. So it's just in every area it can improve. But even on a basic fundamental thing, one of the things I try to encourage laboratories to do is take a step back and figure out how you can automate. Like take a step back and ask yourself, you know, you have all these buckets full of data. You know, do you have, is your bottleneck some intern processing it? Is there some sort of area where you're doing a classification task that's giving you sort of wonky data that you could improve upon by taking a little bit of effort? And so sometimes it's just real low level improving the overall capability of, you know, information processing.
So I got a question. When it comes to automating any kind of process, I worry a lot about creating a system that's too rigid. And as my needs change, suddenly the automation no longer seems like a good idea. Is that like, for example, you know, we both know that the flaws in our Weird Things episode publishing stuff are the humans, involved, but outside of that, there are rigid structures that should something change. Now you have to, now it's not a quick fix to work around it. How would one future proof for that kind of stuff when you design an automated system?
So, you know, for example, like the Weird Things thing is a great example of how I used a solution to solve a problem, but the solution I used so what I did was we wanted to do a thing to streamline the way we uploaded our podcast, created our episode art, our notes, and all this sort of stuff. So I built a server that does that. Like you just upload the file, creates the title, does this sort of stuff. Brian still has to click submit. We still have to click publish. It works pretty well. Although, like, yeah, the other point is like, the thing is I just built a server for doing that. were I to do that over again, and I probably will, I would go use an automation platform where if Brian says, hey, can I get an email? Can you notify me when this thing happens? Then I would just go in and just add a new node and say, do this. And so I'd say that ideally with automation is it's one step to say, yes, it's great, it's automated. The other thing to think of like, okay, if I have to revisit this and keep tweaking this, is that going to be a pain? Am I going to need to pull out a code editor and start writing Python to fix this problem? Or can I just click a drop-down window and solve it? And so I think the idea is you think in terms of friction, what is going to provide the least amount of friction to solve a problem?
Have we gotten any closer? We talk a lot about productivity on the After Things program, but this is, I think, a weird things topic. One of the things that had come up is we dissected our workflows of how we keep notes, how we keep tasks on our radar and so on. And at some point I mentioned that I write myself a lot of emails because I know future Brian is going to sit down and go through his emails, right? And at some point, I wondered, are we any closer to like the email OS or the email UI where last week you introduced me to make.com and its ability to build systems? Could I say, start this task when it's done, send this summary to Brian by email. Brian will email you back with directions from there or will authorize blank, blank, blank. Is that tech pretty plug and play yet?
Yeah, either that or an n8n.io, which is another automation. Yeah, like n8n has a thing like wait for follow-up response email. Like you can absolutely do that. It's just, you literally have to sort of think in a systems level thing. So you could have a thing where it could send you a system, a simple way to do it. I mean, simple, but relatively would be in make.com is it sends you an email and then it creates an entry in a spreadsheet, right? And then you respond and it might look for scrape or whatever out of the subject line, you know, ticket number 1Y9992. And it says, oh, ticket 1992, Brian's responding to this. Let me handle this. So several ways to do it. But yes, you can create an agentic email system very easily right now without having to code. You just have to do a little Google credential stance.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well then, I'm getting,
which, by the way, I'm kind of like, as like a side project, I'm slowly as a way of learning a lot of these systems, trying to build something that is similar where I can, have the Orange Theory template of the day that gets uploaded by a person on Reddit, sent to me at some point during the night. And then I can send back to that email the card of what I did at Orange Theory, because they produce like a data rich card that you could theoretically share on social and stuff like that. But with the models as they are now, I could have an ongoing personal trainer that not only tells me what I am doing for that day before I leave the house, but also then reviews my results and tells me, how I can go from there. So I think that there's a lot that you can do. And I'm kind of working on the side to build that, which is fun. It's fun to screw around with it. To be totally honest, the biggest learning curve for anybody who is kind of scared, who listens to all the cool stuff that Andrew talks about, but has no idea how to go from zero to one, it's pretty much as easy as just signing up for an API. Like just go to OpenAI API, put your credit card on file. And if you're just dinking and dunking around like I am, like, and you don't really have a sense of what's going on, you're going to be able to play with some really, really cool tech. I essentially did this entire make.com build. I tried not to bother Andrew with it. I tried to figure out as much of it by myself. And by figure it out by myself, I mean, I just talked to ChatGPT and ChatGPT talked me through the entire process. Now I hit a wall at a certain point in terms of replicatable results, but I think that there's a lot, that kind of stuff is really, really fun. And the more you get into it, the more you realize like, oh, once I get this going, I can build onto it. I can make it richer. I can make it better.
Yeah, I use a platform now, n8n, which I can get in later on if we want. But, the bottom line is like make.com, and if you're using, not using for personal workflow stuff, the stuff is, it's great. It's, yes, sometimes it might take a few hours going through tutorials and stuff to learn the stuff, but in the long run, your power. And how easy is it? I'm a former, you know, circus magician. So, you know, listen, and now you got ChatGPT to help you out. It just literally comes down to how stubborn you are and how much you just want to try to do it.
It is still really remarkable that the whole planet is learning how to use a thing. And the way they're learning how to use a thing is by asking the thing, how should I use you? Got any ideas?
Yeah. It is funny that I'm envious of everybody because, you know, why I had to figure out how to use GPT-3 and work at OpenAI and all this stuff. I didn't have ChatGPT to do this, but I did have a Slack channel with the people who made it, which is kind of the same thing. And so
analog ChatGPT. Yeah.
Yeah. What is this? What is this thing? We had one of the great things with OpenAI is they have a thing called Explain It Like I'm Five, a channel dedicated to that. And it can be anonymous. So you can ask the dumbest questions in there. And I would say if somebody went back to an analytics thing and said, compared the time frame of when the dumbest questions were asked and when I was hired, there might be an overlap. Not saying anything beyond that, but that's the beauty of these things. It's just, it does take, can take time to do it, but man, it's worth it. Man, it's really worth it. You know, I'm a big fan of just you start to think of these things, you start to do, you know, people go, oh, what happens with computers replace programmers? Well, we start using programs to do all sorts of crazy stuff. Like I'm writing all kind of, like we have an email digest that comes to us before a show, not a thing that we send out to people, but literally show notes. It's just an AI is out there collecting this stuff. And that would seem kind of like sci-fi-ish 20 years ago, like what if obviously they were like news filter stuff, but like what if I have an AI that looks at our past stories and our present stories in the news and suggests new ones? And well, you can do that. So
I was going to ask if there, that's one example of a tool that does exactly what you're talking about. I was wondering if you stumbled across any other new novel uses. I continue to maintain that it's interesting. So ChatGPT has 4.5 out, and for purposes that I most often find myself using ChatGPT, the killer app for ChatGPT for me, 4.5, a bit too smart for my tastes, because what I dig the most is it providing an outside perspective. When I post a YouTube video, I know what's in it. I know what the emotional beats are. I know what's good about it. What I can't possibly know is what combination of words will be the most attractive to the cloud of humans who will eventually come see it. And so I've been using 4.0 to give me a bunch of clickable titles, and I've been pretty happy with my process, as we talked about, is pitch me 10 and now rate your own selections and let's talk about it. And then that way I'm able to launch with a title and two or three backups. But with 4.5, it got, it was almost like I watched it get a little bit too in its head. I got answers that seemed literally too human. It was more like asking a team member and I'm like, no, I need lowest common denominator, fast thinking.
So that brings us to GPT 4.5, which launched this week. And on the heels of Sonnet 3.7 and Grok 3. And in the case of Grok 3 and GPT 4.5, these are models trained with much, much more compute than their predecessors. They've used a lot more compute. GPT 4.5 is a very big model, so big, the pricing for it's insane to be able to use it. And it also, it's one of these things, we're entering this space where you train a model a lot more compute and you look at it and you go like, and we saw this with GPT 3.5 to GPT 4, people kind of forget, was 3.5 got so good when you're trying to find examples of differences between 3.5 and 4. It was hard because 3.5's capabilities increased a lot through just better training, post-training, et cetera. Now we're seeing this with GPT 4.5, you go like, well, the scores are a bit better, but it doesn't feel like it's, I was at 10x better or so much better. And it's like, well, again, that gets into like a hard metric to evaluate. But when you start to look at the quality of responses, they talk about like you get into vibes, which is not the most scientific sort of thing, but you go, oh, wow, this feels like it really understood the question and gave me a great, you know, really detailed answer. And you know, but you know, it's hard because it's not like there's just a single IQ test that tells you how brilliant these things are. I've been using it, to your point, Brian, like, yeah, I've been using it for memory palace stuff. And I'm like, my God, the quality answer is just much, much better than anything I've been getting before. But, you know, a lot of times it feels like overkill. And I do think that we're at a point where we'll be able to take models that are like Grok 3, 4.5, Sonnet, whatever, and improve them slightly, and they'll be good for a decade, you know, by getting smaller, and we'll be using reasoning models for much more complex tasks.
Yeah. Did you guys get the Grok voice?
No. How was that?
Plasticky. Also very weird that on the flavors of Grok's AI voices was plastic sex doll. That was an odd thing to see. And so
that's what it's called?
Might as well. It's a giant heart. Oh, well, and it says, wait a second. Okay. It's labeled sexy.
Okay.
There's a heart. It's labeled sexy. And it says 18 plus. You tell me what that voice is for.
Okay.
I mean, it's obviously for adult conversations, right?
Yes. Yes.
Which, I mean, know your audience, you know, shout out to Grok for giving the people what they want, even if it's not necessarily something that would be brand safe. So before we got to that, you said that, it was plasticky. So it did not feel rich or real.
Its smile is a little bit too brittle and it doesn't blink. Its smile doesn't reach its eyes, and boy, is it trying hard to smile. And boy, I got a sense of uncanny valley that I did not get upon the launch of Advanced Voice Mode.
Outside of metaphor, what can you give me an example?
I don't know. We can talk to it.
I don't know. I mean, I was just curious your experience if you remembered what you asked it.
I mean, it's just. Yeah.
Compare it to advanced voice mode on ChatGPT.
Okay. So, advanced voice mode, it relies on some fairly nuanced verbal takes to buy itself time, you know, like a suggestion of a sigh or a little bit of a vocal fill moment, that is not ironed out. Now having said that, they're compensating, and I think it's a right move. They're compensating with novelty. You know, for example, they've got default storyteller, romantic meditation, conspiracy, not a therapist, not a doctor, unhinged, sexy, motivation. Oh, they have 18 plus motivation and 18 plus argumentative. This is oftentimes in various storytelling arts. When you have low fidelity, like in the early days of video games, and you want to manufacture a real emotion, usually shock and fear is one, or, you know, written humor or whatever. But, you know, it took decades before a video game was able to make me cry. And so right now they're doing like low fidelity technological arts. We're seeing a bunch of novel stuff.
Pre-selecting the experience and saying like, you don't have one thing here.
Oh my God. It was listening to me.
Yeah, Brian, I'm right here. You sneaky bastard. Caught me creeping on your rant, huh? Gotta say, you're spot on about that novelty shit compensating for the rough edges. So what's your favorite flavor of this voice mode circus? Unhinged, keeping you hooked, or you?
All right. And then it's constantly telling me to subscribe to its newsletter. It's exhausting is what it is. That's what it is. It's exhausting. Just like because, a person because, who can't.
Because it keeps prompting you for a thing.
Like yes.
It is just desperate to keep the conversation going.
Yes. 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 That is my impression. Now, keep in mind, this is all of 24 hours, but.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the people need to know. The people need to know. That's it sounded like the voice was, I mean, I don't know. I guess like the baseline for how the voices sound is so good now that it's like, it's not even like you can ding it for sounding more or less human. It's like, they all sound pretty human.
Yeah. The one of the things it gets into is the difference is that the advanced voice mode model is what's called speech to speech, and that it is one model that hears your voice and the AI figures out how to respond. Where the other systems you're seeing, what they do is they take your voice, they then do a transcript. The transcript goes to the AI, and then the AI generates a thing, and that goes to a voice to a speech generator model, right? And that was the problem they had with advanced voice mode early on, was because it was an all one model. It could tell your volume, your accent, all of these things. And early users even reported it mimicking their voice, which, you know, maybe like, what's wrong with you? What's wrong with you? I don't need to hear that. And so I'd say that to get to the real nuance, you're going to have to get to models that are way more sophisticated, I think, like advanced voice mode. But, you know, we'll see. Yeah, that sounded very much like a model that was just taking the text and going to a speech model and doing
well, responding. You can literally see it. You see the text showing up and then you hear the voice reading you the text, which also kind of takes away the illusion. It's like, there are times I want you to show me your work on your, you know, chain of thought and so on, but I don't want to know that there's a second entity being the actor who's reading the script that is showing up in front of me. Like that's, I don't know, whatever. I don't want to be too harsh. Like I'm judging the flavor of miracle soup. I mean, it's still a freaking miracle, but.
Yeah.
Miracle soup available half price before 5.
Yeah. Too salty.
Yeah. These things continuously get more and more incredible. So we shall see. So I think that we may have a Starship launch coming up soon.
Ooh, is this now we have a longstanding prediction bet about whether or not I believe I said that the next time that the Starship launches and they try to land it, it's going to land perfectly. Both stages on the very first try.
But yeah, so the launch is scheduled for Monday.
Okay.
And which side of the bet are we on?
I am on the
optimistic side.
Yeah, it's going to surprise everyone that he's going to nail it first go.
Okay.
What are the stakes? What are the stakes?
Well, I don't remember. I mean, this is a past tense bet. If you want us to make up a new one right now, we can.
No, I'm like, what do you think? Pie? Are we doing pie to the face?
Well, I mean, so far we have a 0 out of 0 track record of following through on that. But sure, yeah. Oh, I'll do a pie in the face.
All right. I think I'm interested in getting in on this.
I don't know. I think the last time there was somebody, there was an agent on the inside that we could just send a pie to that lives in Andrew's house that could just hit him with a pie.
I tell you, there is a person here who'd be very happy to pie me.
So. I know. I think, look, here it goes. We're locking it in for Monday. I am going to be the purchaser of the pie.
Okay. Either way. First of all, we should know whether or not they're going to attempt to land both stages.
All right.
Because
they are attempting to land both stages.
Yes.
That is the bet. If they do land the stages after attempt, then Andrew takes a pie to the face. They are unsuccessful in landing both stages, that Brian will take a pie to the face and I will pie Brian myself.
Uh-oh. we'll know what kind of episode we're in for when suddenly it's like, all right, we're trying out the mobile studio rig outdoors, people. Here we go. The Weird exactly. Things Here podcast.
We're laying down a tarp.
It just sounds horrible when we talk about, like, I'll put a pie in his face.
All right. Save it for unhinged mode.
Yeah. You're the one who said it.
18 plus unhinged mode.
You're the one who said it. So I would say going back to, so one of the big things was that between Grok 3 and GPT 4.5, which were using way more compute than like the predecessor models to do. And some of the evals, you look at the evals, they don't like blow things out of the water. There are improvements there in some ways, some cases regressions. And people are like, is this Have we reached the limit of what we can do?
The wall, the famed wall that people were saying, which was something that we had kind of poo-pooed a little bit in our previous conversations about AI development, because you were smashing evals in the, you know, 6 months since that was the conversation. But that had been a rumor that internally more compute did not necessarily equal the kind of gains that it had in, you know, 3 to 4.
Yeah, and I think that there's a couple of things that come into play. There's the argument being made that, like, you know, transformer technology as is, you know, the current state can only sort of yield certain kinds of results, that you can only get certain kinds of results from the data that we have. There's also the argument that you have to kind of like be pushing the kind of data you're trying to train on. And there are so many dials that can be turned that it's hesitant to sort of see that, but also that we knew the wall really wasn't there, because we found out too that these models, by the way, they're called, you know, they're base models. They're basically a base model where you just say, hey, and 4.5 is not really a frontier model. You know, 4.5 is an improvement on 4 and just sort of like throwing more compute. So it's not like a whole new paradigm in that. But with the base models, you know, we see that they can, you know, you give them a question, it gives you its best answer. And the fact that you're seeing these models give you reasoning model-like answers in some cases. So we look at those evaluations, we have base models, and then we have reasoning models, which then take the question, break it down, go back to it, address it, and whatever. And that's where, like, you know, O3 is still seems to be on top for that, you know, for being able to do those kinds of, you know, responses. And that's a reasoning model. And we're seeing other reasoning models, like, you know, R1 are very good. Sonnet with thinking is very good. Grok 3 with thinking mode is just, these things are all really great when you give them that ability to do that. So what, you know, how we define the wall, if we want to say there's a wall for like single pass models, you know, there might be diminishing returns, but not when we let them work in a system.
Yeah, and that's what the OpenAI roadmap that was discussed by Sam Altman a few weeks ago is that this would probably be the last single use model or base model that wouldn't be a blending of a bunch of different models for which it would decide what it was going to do from the top, right? Just built all in one.
Yeah, because you're finding out too that, you know, you ask a query and I don't know which model. You know, I work on these things. You ask, like, which model should I use for this? I have to sit there and think, like, this is going to be a single response. I need that. Like, no, I need a little more reasoned response to check itself. I'll use this. But ideally, really, you're just going to have a system that you ask and it gives you the best answer.
I mean, weirdly, kind of like humans. Some systems will be endowed with inherently faster running processors, but others will evolve to have such personalities that you don't really care what's under the hood.
Yeah, I've said that, you know, one of the ways to think about automation is often just like look at an org chart, you know, and figure out like, okay, you know, what, well, how is an org, how does this function? How are we, you know, what does this head of this department do? What do these people do?
Here's something you can do, dear listener. Patreon.com/weirdthings is where you need to go if you want to support this show. We always love when there are people that take their hard-earned coin and toss it at us. We're coming at you each and every week and talking about technology, science, and the news of the weird. Look, pay us money or else she'll go hungry.
Uh-oh.
There's a baby on screen now. That's for video viewers only. Are you gonna go hungry if people don't subscribe on Patreon?
Yes, I will.
Oh my God, baby's first words.
Her first words were a Patreon plug.
It's all ready for LinkedIn, and my child asked me. that whole genre of my child said this to me of like, oh, the wisdom of the babes. Like people just manufacture that stuff now.
No,
like
that's so stupid.
Yeah, that was like somebody had one and was like, you know, my kid said something and cried and says, why are you thinking, what are you doing, mom? It's like, or dad, like, oh, I'm just thinking how I'm going to write this into a LinkedIn post now.
Yeah.
That weird sort of desire to create some sort of pseudo authenticity is a very,
you know, it's really debasing and it's really beneath artists and creatives. I'm glad that we don't engage in that. By the way, Bella looks fantastic, super cute, just the best.
Yeah.
I really hope that we're able to keep doing this podcast.
Exactly. Also, yeah. Brian, I got my email for Callie's cards. And so I'm glad that those are in production.
Oh, that's right. Well, you know, hopefully he spelled the website right. CalliesCards.com.
But you're right. It's exploiting your children for your own financial gain. Is
super messed up. Super messed up.
I look forward to having children that I can, you know, make use of in this manner too. So,
right? You're an emotional hedge, an emotional leverage that I can keep with the audience. Right? You'll learn to do this yourself.
Well, I think that's kind of the weird news this week. You guys want to do picks?
Yeah. I just started last week I talked about the first 15 lives of Harry August, and I enjoyed that very, very much. It was fantastic. It was a lot of fun. And now I'm back to proper nonfiction. So I'm reading Reset by Dan Heath. It's great. It's great. It's about what happens when you have a system. We're talking about systems, and you know it's time to shake things up and make some changes. And it has it's a short 4.5 hour audiobook, but it just gives you nothing but meat. And it says, for example, take a tour of the entire production pipeline from stem to stern, which is, you know, literally something I've been doing. And once you see it, you can't unsee it, whatever it is. And the example he gives is there's a administrator or a school teacher or whatever who was asked to rate her schools, give them letter grades for everything from approachability to exciting students to giving opportunities to expand and quality of education or whatever. And then she audited one child's day at school. And on the second hour of 2 hour algebra, which at an administrative level made a lot of sense and checked a lot of boxes, she heard the bell ring and got excited and accidentally almost stood up, not realizing that it wasn't her bell. And she visibly was disappointed. And then she was asked to revisit the letter grade she had given on her own school now that she had spent one whole day as a student. And the answers, unsurprisingly, were very different. And there's no substitute for just laying your own eyes on the data, taking in the raw feed and seeing the shape of things, not as you can spin them, but as they actually are.
Mm, yeah. Yeah. That's the bitter pill, the thing to sort of step back and say, what am I doing wrong?
Yeah.
What am I not seeing? And small doses.
My pick is Severance. It's so good. So good. I've not seen last night's episode.
Oh, wait, I haven't either.
I'm excited. Oh, I'm excited.
Although I did see a spoiler in a headline. Yeah, I don't know if it's a spoiler.
I'm going to hang up. Bye.
All right, bye.
My pick is the Mickey Mouse cartoons, the new ones, well, from the last decade or so, by Paul Rudish on Disney Plus. They're really fun, really, really well done.
Paul Rudish, like what age demographic are they targeted at?
Well, Brian,
good question. I'm really, should I not ask? Like the only Mickey Mouse new content that I could think of is like the Mickey Mouse Club from the late aughts, early teens, which I don't think is what you're talking about, because you would have been singing hot dog, hot dog, hot diggity dog.
Well, there is a funny hot dog episode too. So Paul Rudish did Powerpuff Girls.
Oh, right on.
Worked on a lot of different. He's a, you know, a seasoned animator who worked on other stuff, really well respected. And they brought him in and said, hey, do you want to take over Mickey Mouse? And he did a redesign of Mickey Mouse. And I have found them just to be like just delightful. Like they're really, you ask me what, you're like, I don't know. I'm watching them, Brian. I'm enjoying them. I'm sure kids would like them too.
I'll give them a try. Hey, did we talk about the Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man series on Disney Plus?
No, not yet.
Oh, it's great. Have you watched it?
Yeah.
I only watched the first two episodes, but I'm so very here for the art style, the color palette. And my favorite part was the gentle riffing on, you know, we've seen a few Spider-Man stories and sometimes we're bored of hearing how he got his powers. And other times we're actually, you know what? That's it. That we're just bored of hearing how he got his powers. But now in the multiverse and everything, I really enjoyed the game they were playing in the first 5 minutes of like, okay, where are we in the timeline? Does he have his powers? Does he not? And the fake out of like, oh, I missed a train. I guess I'll opens backpack, eat a sandwich, you know? And it's like, oh, look at this guy. It's definitely, does he know who Doctor Strange is? Some kind of wizard. So he doesn't. And then a symbiote spider that doesn't die. And I don't know. I like hearing a band do a cover of a song I know.
Yeah, I thought artistically it was very, very cool. I would say that thematically, some things just hit me over the head in a way that I thought was done, I thought, in a more clever, nuanced way with X-Men 97. So, you know, it was sort of like, oh, okay, you're going to go about this way. All right, it's cool. It's kind of like a lecture. That's fine. Where like X-Men 97 was just so cool.
You know what? I do need to watch X-Men 97. In fact, I'm going to write a note.
All right.
Send an email. It's that good.
I mean, I think that if you're into kind of the X-Men, the X-Men cartoon of the 90s, and it's very much the Top Gun Maverick. Imagine this was a much better predecessor than a way. It's not the dig knock on the cartoon of the 90s. They did cool themes and plots and stuff, but it's just literally like, let's take this and just build on this and just sort of like really just, I enjoyed it thoroughly. I'm not a cartoon guy, but I really liked it.
I didn't know that you're not a cartoon guy. Oh, you know what? You'll approve of this. Here, I'm going to text you. I don't think I'll get in trouble for this, but my eldest Penelope is starting to take some figure drawing classes at university, all part of her degree. She wants to be a skilled fantasy novel writer. And here, I'm going to copy this. I'm going to send this over to you, Andrew. She was told to pick a movie, or she was assigned a movie, I guess, and she had to do a character study. And here's her art from the movie she had to do to give impressions of.
Very cool.
Yeah, she took scenes from Blade Runner, and it's really a testament to the fact, you know, to the composition of all those shots, that it's like, not only there's very little in these shots that are indicative of the substance of what's happening, but the composition of them, you instantly can tell, right?
Oh yeah. 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 So what was the assignment?
Here, let me see what she, I'll read her words on this. She said, it was, there we go. The studies for Blade Runner. Where did she say that? She goes, I have to watch another movie for class. This time I have to grab screenshots from a movie of my choice to turn it into a series of black and white drawings. I want to finally watch the director's cut of Blade Runner. So she had the freedom to pick whatever movie she wanted. And so she went with that and got to see the director's cut and just sort of like right there, that one. And so I guess there's kind of multiple filters. There's, you know, the source material as seen through Ridley Scott's eyes. Then we have the filter of the director's cut. Then we have the filter of my daughter going through and just stopping at moments and be like, yeah, that one. And then doing studies on it. It's fascinating. I love that.
These are great. That's great. That's absolutely great. Great. Quite the artistic family you have there, Brian.
I know, for good or for ill. And the weirdest part, and we've talked about this in other Weird Things episodes, but I can't think of a core fundamental to humanity that isn't rapidly being taken over by, or, you know, being handled by artificial means. And as a result, it is strange advice for somebody who didn't think you'd ever say these words, but the safest bet is to become a very skilled communicator and a bit of a poet, so that as more resources and abundance rains down upon us, we can all make money by impressing each other. We have some new fans here in the chat. I've long time, when I put on my futurist hat, I've been thinking in terms of eventually people who want to actually go out and risk death and have a frontier lifestyle will do so among the stars. And everyone else who chooses to live here on Earth, you know, will be aware that we all live in a Petri dish, a very, very nice Petri dish. And pretty much the rest of us, since we won't have to worry as much as we have in the past about where we get our calories, our nutrition, whether, you know, how we handle disease and all that stuff. Instead, we will compete for status in a grand and secret game of poetry here on planet Earth. And so weirdly, I think I'm glad that I told my three daughters to be good artists. I don't know. It's a weird
thing. Teach them to invest, Brian, too. Teach them to invest.
Yes. Okay. That's all part of it as well.
Yes. Yes. I do think understanding that what other people want, teach them how to network and how to invest. So,
yes.
You know, you can be a great artist, which is all loft by yourself.
Yeah. Sorry. I should, you'll notice I said to be great communicators, which is all part of it.
Good call. Good call.
You got to close. I don't know. Capital is for closers.
Yeah. We talk about that too on after things too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Brian, it's been after, but it's not. It's weird. It's been weird.
Perfect. Lock it. Cut. Print.